sitting still. You know, this is part of this high energy kid. You have this kid who just jumps around. Like the moment their eyes open, they're just like a mile a minute, whether it's talking at three or going from activity to activity. This is more educational for anyone listening who has a child who's younger. A one-year-old to two-year-old, I'm going to say right now, you have to have the expectation that they are not going to sit still. One to two is a very big time of they are exploring their world and they're going to jump. They'll play with one activity, play with another. And so many times parents will get very frustrated or stressed because they feel like their toddler, one to two-year-old, should be able to follow an activity for a long time. Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. I am Dr. Mona, and thank you for joining me each and every week for all of your reviews and ratings. This is how the podcast continues to grow to be one of the top 50 parenting podcasts in the United States. On this episode, I chat with a mother in the Peds Doc Talk community about the high energy level of her toddler. Is this typical? Is this something that's a concern? Remember that if you are a parent to an infant or have a toddler, I am launching toddler workshops the first week of May 2023. So if you're listening to this before then, make sure you get on our email list via the link in bio to find out all about these amazing courses coming your way. And if you're listening to this after May 1st, make sure you grab these courses today. I have three toddler courses and an ebook, one on picky eating, food refusal, and feeding toddlers, one on potty training, one on toddler behavior and tantrums, and an ebook on toddler development. And the conversation I have with Janelle is just a little sample of what's in that ebook. Like I said, we're talking all about high energy toddlers, what is typical. And on this episode, we are talking about impulse control and attention span of toddlers under four, what to expect. Questions a clinician would ask in evaluating a hyperactive toddler, and what not to do between 1 and 2 years of age when your child lacks any impulse control. Let's get to the conversation. Hey, Janelle, welcome to the show. So tell me, what is on your mind today as a mom?
Yeah, thanks, Dr. Mona, for having me on today. So I guess basically I'm just kind of wondering, I have an almost 3-year-old and what is normal as far as energy level? Like, is it normal for her to have this much energy? And at what point do you kind of think, like, maybe do we assess this further?
Very good question. And one that I think I've asked my husband a lot of the times too. This is a topic that I think many parents can relate to because so much of development is quote unquote typical. And some of it can be atypical where we're like, okay, this is normal for a 3-year-old to be acting like this or a 2-year-old, but when does it become an issue or a concern that needs further evaluation, which is what it sounds like you want to know more of?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So this is right in that time frame where I get a lot of these questions and concerns, you know, the under 3, 3.5 crowd where parents are like, whoa. And, you know, we're talking about high energy. Do you also feel like with that high energy, she's not able to sit still? Like, do you feel like she goes quickly from activity to activity? Or do you feel like there is some degree or maybe some improvement in attention span also?
Yeah, so it kind of depends on what she's doing. She absolutely loved doing puzzles. So sometimes she'll sit for like 15, 20 minutes at a time doing a puzzle. But then like once she's done with the puzzles, maybe she'll go and she'll play in her little kitchen. And then like before long from the kitchen, she goes to, you know, another activity. So there's definitely jumping around, but it kind of depends on, you know, what it is. And she loves reading books. So like at nighttime, she'll sit really nicely.
Okay.
You know, before bed when we read a couple books. So she definitely seems like she has the ability to do it. But I guess, is this just age, you know, related?
I love that you're already talking about things that I like to ask questions about, which is the ability to sit still and focus on a activity. And we have to respect the fact that I do not expect a toddler at this age to sit through every activity, but there are activities she does. Like you said, puzzles, a book. This is really great information to hear. So since we're talking about this, I figured it's a useful time to talk about what's typical and atypical for ages, right? We're obviously talking about a 3-year-old, but I think, you know, talking about this high energy concept, I want to talk about normalcy in what we should expect of a child, how long they should sit still, because that's part of this, and also impulse control. So sitting still, you know, this is part of this high energy kid. You have this kid who just jumps around. Like the moment their eyes open, they're just like a mile a minute, whether it's talking at three or going from activity to activity. This is more educational for anyone listening who has a child who's was younger. A one-year-old to two-year-old, I'm going to say right now, you have to have the expectation that they are not going to sit still. One to two is a very big time of they are exploring their world and they're going to jump. They'll play with one activity, play with another. And so many times parents will get very frustrated or stressed because they feel like their toddler, one to two-year-old, should be able to follow an activity for a long time. But as we know, if we've been there, and I'm sure you had the same experience, they are going to go and jump from activity to activity very fast. So that is really normal between one and two. Did you notice that with your daughter between one and two, that her attention span was very short?
Oh, for sure. I remember recently I was looking back through some pictures and I was just like, wow, she was so busy. Like, I remember just being exhausted at the end of every day because it was like, just feel like I was constantly chasing after her.
Yes. And this can be really hard. You know, one thing I always say to my families between this age is we also want to be careful at this age because they are so busy. Sometimes parents will lean a little bit too heavily on screen time between one and two, because they'll tell me, well, doctor, the only time they listen or pay attention is if I put a screen in front of them. And we know from a developmental standpoint that I don't mind co-watching at this age if you're co-watching and pointing out language or things together. The goal is not for them to sit still in a screen. Like, that's not what I want them to do. That's actually not beneficial to them if you're watching TV with them. So just a little thing for anyone listening who may be in that 1 to 2 year time frame and you're like, well, oh my gosh, like the screen is a savior. It's okay to use it if you need it for like little things here and there, maybe at a restaurant, or maybe you need it for, you know, exceptions and it's not the rule, but be careful that you're not utilizing it too much between this age to help them focus or sit still, because that's not what we want. We expect a 1 to 2 year old to be a busy body. Like, that is very normal. And then 2 year old. So now we're dealing with like a 2 to 3 year old. You may start to see 1 to maybe 4 minutes of sitting still. And I put that as a big range because it is a big range. 1 to 4 minutes is a big range that a child who's sitting for 1 minute is just as typical as a child who's sitting for 4 minutes. And I'm talking about activities that interest them. Like, just say your daughter loved puzzles at two, she may be focused on that. But then after maybe 2 minutes, she's like, I'm going to move to something else. And I love what you said, that now that she's three, you said that she did a puzzle for 15 minutes.
Yeah, she has a set that has like multiple puzzles in one box. And in one sitting, she can do at least 3 or 4 of them. So yeah.
Beautiful.
It's amazing to see. Yeah. When I look back at pictures, I'm like, there has been improvement, but still, like, you know, I guess at what point do you continue to, you know, hope for more or like longer attention span? Yeah.
Yeah. And so I do believe that the pivotal time is 3 years old. So between 3 and 4 is when I see this start to usually improve. And when I say improve, I'm not saying that they're going to listen to everything, be this perfect little sitting angel. That's not the expectation, but you're going to see improvement from that, obviously, 1 year old. And it sounds like we're seeing that. And your daughter, her ability to focus on puzzles for 15 minutes is actually on the higher range of focus, which is awesome. A 3 year old, I'd expect anywhere from 5 to 15 minutes of sitting still, right? Meaning maybe focusing on an activity. So you're right in that range and in a good way. And do you feel like maybe things have changed as she approached three?
Yeah, I do feel like even especially within just either the last couple of weeks like, okay, that there's a positive change. So that's why I kept thinking, like, hoping maybe it's just the age.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I love this because like you said, a year ago, or maybe 6 months ago, you were like, well, is this normal? And maybe now you're feeling a little bit like, okay, I see this is very typical. Things are improving in terms of sitting still. And we'll talk about impulse control in just a second. But this is a very common question. And I say this because me even understanding child development, when I had my own child and saw it happen in front of me, I also questioned the normalcy of it. I'm like, okay, I know that a 14-month-old can't sit still, but come on, like, this is like a lot. And that's why I really want to normalize that, because this is a very common concern. So I'm happy that you feel like things are improving, but it's really important because maybe someone listening to this is like, you know what? I have a 3.5 year old and he or she is not sitting, and I'm not able to get them to focus on anything that interests them, right? Then there should be a conversation with a clinician on further evaluation. And then I'm also going to talk about impulse control. Obviously, when we talk about impulse control, this is like them being able to be patient, or let's talk about like turn taking, or them understanding that they're not supposed to do something and like not jumping off the side of a couch, right? We have to understand that it kind of goes hand in hand with sitting still, that a one-year-old, you just cannot expect them to understand what's forbidden and also this impulsive behavior. A two-year-old, kind of along the lines of now they're sitting still a little bit more, we can't expect them to consistently understand, but maybe there is some ability to manage behaviors and teach, right? Like teach them more in that 2 to 3 year range of, you say that, you know, we can't do that, but we can do this. And it's clicking a little bit more than it did at one. And I'm sure you saw that as well.
Yes.
And then three, like, I mean, I'm telling you, I love three-year-olds because it's like something happens in that brain at 3 years old. And a lot of it is the cognitive development, right? Their cognitive development is really skyrocketing between the ages of 1 to 4. But at three, there's a lot of understanding of their autonomy. There's a lot of cognitive understanding that they actually can understand why a little bit more, right? We can't expect them to understand when a certain behavior is not allowed. And they also have better impulse control than that two-year-old. Yes, they may not be able to always take their turn or share. That's not an expectation at this age. But I'm talking like you see a bunch of preschoolers, like a bunch of three-year-olds. You should be able to sit in a circle at three and listen to a teacher tell something like a story with a group of kids. As a pediatrician, mom, and podcaster, I want to share with you a podcast I recently discovered. It's called Understood Explains, and this season of the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Ertube, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs. The latest season of Understood Explains covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP, and it busts common myths about special education. I listened to an episode called The Difference Between IEPs and 504 Plans, and I learned so much that I honestly didn't know before. I now feel I can better explain these to my patients and their families and better support them in their neurodiversity journey. Navigating ADHD, dyslexia, and other learning and thinking differences can be confusing, and this podcast helps to validate these struggles and provide actionable tips that are useful for parents, teachers, and clinicians. To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tidy humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.
Are you overwhelmed by the things that get in the way of you doing what you want to do? Are you looking for ways to simplify life to better align with your values? Do you want to create space in your schedule so you have room for more of the good stuff? Play, joy, relationships, gratitude, and more? If you answered yes to any of these questions, I invite you to check out Edit Your Life, a podcast to help you edit the unnecessary from your life so you have more room to enjoy the awesome. Through episodes with me, Christine Coe, and a range of super smart, compassionate, and thoughtful guests, you'll come away with big picture insights and practical ways to declutter your home, schedule, and mental space without getting bogged down by perfection. I have always believed that small moments and actions matter tremendously. My goal is to help you find agency and space in your life through doable baby steps that will leave you feeling accomplished instead of overwhelmed. Check out Edit Your Life wherever you enjoy your podcasts.
If you're listening to this and your three-year-old is just not able to sit and listen to a teacher or maybe some other caregiver read a story,
I'm talking like the 5 minutes that we mentioned for the sitting still, mm-hmm. then we need to dig a little further of, okay, is this something that needs an evaluation? And the evaluation that me and Janelle are talking about is more so, does there need to be an evaluation for ADD, ADHD? So hyperactivity, inattentiveness, something that is a reality. You know, a lot of people do have neurodiversity, and that means, you know, ADHD. And so that's kind of, I think, what your understanding and question was about, right?
My husband was on medication. I mean, that would have been like in the mid 80s. So, mm-hmm. you know, was it more prescribed then? I don't know. He doesn't remember that he was actually ever diagnosed with ADD or ADHD, but he remembers taking medication for a few years while he was at school. So yeah, I guess we don't have a lot of history from his mother who passed away. But anyway, so with that kind of in mind, is there something to kind of watch for, I guess?
Yeah, I think this is such a great conversation because absolutely there is a genetic familial history link between ADHD and obviously offspring and siblings. Like there's a lot of data, obviously there's a bunch of research out there, but between twins, like if your daughter had a twin, there is a 70 to 80% chance that if one twin has it, the other twin is probably going to have it too. Obviously the diagnosis okay. usually will happen at the same time or maybe a little later. So that's really strong, right? 70 mm-hmm. to 80%. With yeah. a parent to a child, the data is kind of all over the place, but it's a range of 50 to 70%. So that's actually pretty high, right? So yeah, if an adult has it, then the child tends to have it. And interestingly, similar to autism, right? Autism is also a neurodiverse condition. Interestingly, women with ADHD are less likely to be diagnosed because somehow, either from parenting or other societal things, they don't have as much of the obvious symptoms. So it's a very interesting concept. We don't understand why it happens so much, but it is a reality that yes, if a family member has it, especially we're talking like a mom or dad or, you know, genetic mom or dad, that yes, the child could also have a 50% chance that they'll have it as well. So like I have a husband who does, from my perception, have ADHD. He also feels the same. He's never been on medication for it, but he has chosen a career, ER physician, that has been able to foster his ADHD mm-hmm. brain, right? He's able to go to one thing and then the other and then the other and, you know, lacks impulse control for being a 30 whatever year old. So I do see it in my husband. He also agrees. He never got an official diagnosis. It sounds like your husband that is kind of unsure about the diagnosis, the medication. But when exactly. my son was younger, I had the same thing as you in that I knew my husband was this way. And I, you know, we'd see our son doing all this hyperactivity, sort of inability to sit still, mm-hmm. high energy. And I would observe and not get worried because I'm like, look, if he has it, he has it. It's not like I can stop this, right?
Exactly.
And I would just observe. And that's what we're talking about here, right? There's nothing we can do or diagnose under the age of 4. So if you're listening to this and you're like, oh my gosh, my 3-year-old is like off the wall, I want you to talk to your clinician only because I want them to ask about sleep, and we'll get into that, other developmental milestones, how are they eating? Because all of those things can also have an impact on hyperactivity as well and high energy. Sure. But if they're otherwise, you know, sleeping well, eating a balanced variety of food, developing beautifully in terms of motor skills, cognitive and language, there mm-hmm. really is nothing that can be diagnosed or evaluated under the age of 4. The child has to be at least 4 to 5 years old for us to even make a diagnosis of ADHD. That doesn't mean that a 3-year-old whose parents are like at their wit's end of hyperactivity and concern of lack of impulse control has no support. That's why I want the conversations to be happening so that a parent feels supported and that if they're feeling overwhelmed that this something's up, they can at least maybe get some therapy, right, like a psychologist or an evaluation of their development, you know, just to make sure all is good. But this is important conversations because I was there too, in that I knew that there was a family history. I'm observing. I'm not going like, oh my gosh, he has it. He has it. But me and my husband would talk about it, right? Like my husband would say, wow, he's really high energy. And I say, you know, you were the same way. Sounds like yeah. your daughter follows like your husband.
Yes.
You're the same way. And we're just going to watch. We can't do anything. We're just going to foster his development and monitor. And I was waiting for that 3.5, closer to 4. And you know, in our experience, I did see that sort of improvement in the sitting still, improvement in the impulse control, which is what we would expect as that child approaches 4 years old, as their cognitive development obviously is still developing, but their brain really is developing a lot in impulse control and sitting still by the age of 4. And if we're not seeing that child who's still like only able to sit 2 minutes, or a four-year-old who literally cannot understand turn-taking at all, or, you know, forbidden behaviors, then we definitely mm-hmm. want to evaluate further. And it's a big picture evaluation to talk about, like I said, how is the everything going? The family unit, the feeding, the sleep, development, and all of that.
Sure. Yeah. And I am exactly how you feel, you know, like that. It's not that it makes me like scared if right. she would have something, but it's just more like being aware of what, you know, of your husband or your partner, whatever, and what their history could be.
And also, yeah, it's not even being afraid. It's more just being aware and being able to advocate if you need to, exactly. right? Because I love this conversation, Janelle, because it's like one of these situations that absolutely we can say things are normal, and likely it is. And absolutely it could be typical that a child would do this. But as parents, I think it's perfectly reasonable to say to ourselves, is this typical behavior of a child's development? And that's why we're yeah. chatting. Or is this something that I need to intervene on?
Yeah.
Because that's our role as parents. So I love this. I think it's so great. And yeah, so we talked about the family history, which I think is an important concept. And for your daughter, what I'm happy to hear is that we are able to sit still. And then I already alluded to it, if someone's listening and goes to their pediatrician or clinician about high activity levels, they should be asking you about feeding, like I mentioned. And what I mean by feeding is, let's use your daughter as an example. Does she sit to eat meals? Is she eating diverse foods? Like, is she very selective, or is she somewhat having a diversity in her palate?
Yeah, no, she's overall been a really good eater. I mean, probably like maybe 8 months ago, I mean, she had just been in a booster, like pulled up to the table, but I took that booster off. And so she's just sitting on a big chair. So she definitely has more freedom now. So she'll sit there for a while and then she'll jump away and then she'll come back. And I'm trying to like be more consistent about, well, if you get up, like you need to stay at the table and eat. But she does eat a very well-balanced diet, I feel like.
Well, I love hearing that because, you know, if I'm concerned about high activity level, high energy level, so I'm going to be asking about that. So that's wonderful to hear. The other thing is about sleep. So do you feel like she sleeps at least 10 to 12 hours at night?
Yeah, I usually aim between 7:30 and 8, and then she sleeps till 7:30 in the morning. So
okay, any naps at this age, or it's a hit or miss?
She does, for the most part. She still naps hour and a half to 2 hours sometimes. Sometimes she doesn't, but for the most part, she's still a pretty good napper. Yeah.
Oh, this is like Ryan in a girl form, because it's exactly the same situation. Like sleeps at night, the moment his eyes open, it's like, I call Ryan my hype guy. Like he wakes up in like the fire of a thousand suns. Like he's just like ready to start his day, but then he sleeps, which is a really protective and good thing. So even when me and my husband would talk about hyperactivity, or, you know, is this typical? I would always say, you know, this is actually really good that he does sleep. Now, every child has different sleep needs. Like I say the range of 10 to 12 hours, because yes, at 3 years old, I'd expect, let's use even 9 to 12 hours at night. If they're very tired, they could sleep 13 hours. That's fine. But if we're dealing with a child who is high energy, like the parents reporting, and there's not good sleep, I'm talking like 8 hours, broken 10 to 12 hours, meaning they wake up and they're up for an hour and then they can't go back to sleep. There is a concern there that we have to evaluate a chicken or the egg situation. Is it that they're not sleeping because they're hyperactive, or are they hyperactive because they're not sleeping? And this is what I'm talking about, that these conversations are really important if a child's not sleeping, because is it a medical thing? Like, is there something like snoring and sleep apnea? Like, are they snoring a lot? Is it that we're not creating and teaching the child boundaries with sleep, or are they really just unable to fall asleep? And so, you know, we definitely like to know these things. And so for anyone listening who feels like, wow, like I have a kid who's super hyperactive and they're just not sleeping at all. Like you just feel like they're just not getting good sleep. Sleep is disconnected. There's no naps. There's no structure. It is a good conversation to chat with a clinician or even like a sleep consultant to talk about the sleep. You know, sleep is a foundation for me. It's very important.
Yeah.
I'm not asking every family to sleep train or whatever it is that gets your kid to sleep. It's so important to me because it also is a health marker for me. Like I said, it can tell us a lot about a child if they're not sleeping and they're 3-year-old or 4-year-old. Well, what's going on? And as we know in pediatrics, like if a child of the age of 4 or 5 and above, like school age kids, if they're not sleeping well, it can make hyperactivity symptoms worse. So many times we diagnose hyperactivity as ADHD when in reality we realize after digging that the child is going to bed at midnight. And it hasn't been hyperactivity all along, or maybe it's a portion of it, but it was actually the lack of sleeping. And so sleep hygiene is an important concept. It sounds like your daughter has that, but I wanted to mention that to the listeners, because that combined with the meals, right? Like, again, diversity of meals. I understand a three-year-old is going to want to get up sometimes. It's very normal for them to do that. You're being very consistent with your boundary of, okay, if you get up, that means your meal's done. Are you done? And very consistent with that. And their intake can fluctuate. We know that after the age of one, you know, your daughter could be eating like a whole pizza. And then the next day is like, I don't want pizza. So it's very normal for their intake to fluctuate. But I'm hearing a lot of good things. Like I said, sleep and feeding. And then it sounds like developmentally, you feel like she's meeting language milestones, motor milestones, and other, like, she's doing puzzles, which is great at three, but other cognitive milestones.
Yeah, I would say for sure. Yeah, she talks all day from morning to night.
Beautiful. Okay.
And I also, relating back to that sleep, I do notice, you know, once in a while, if she skips a nap, it's like at night, she's so hyperactive.
Yeah.
I think, is it because they're kind of like, she's trying to keep herself awake almost like.
Yeah.
It is a huge, like, I can definitely see how that could be misdiagnosed.
Oh, absolutely. Another side note is I do feel like a lot of parents think that they drop the nap too early. Like a lot of families, when the toddler starts having a nap strike around 18 months, I'll actually say closer to 2 years, between 18 months to 2.5, toddlers can have nap strikes where all of a sudden they were taking their one nap and they stop wanting to do it. But my advice for everyone listening is please remember that that is actually really young for a lot of toddlers to be dropping naps. I want you to still offer it. It doesn't mean that they're going to take it every day, but we need to at least offer it. And if not, then it's going to be some quiet time. They're going to, you know, maybe on their own, they can sing to themselves. You don't have to force them down to sleep, but it's, we need to at least offer it, because you're right. If a child doesn't nap and they really actually probably needed that nap and weren't offered it, the evenings can have that witching hour, right? That dysregulation, that sort of like, I'm tired and overstimulated. And it all goes back to sleep needs, right? Every child is different. So someone listening could say, I swear, I dropped the nap at 2.5. They didn't need it. They're completely fine in the afternoon. But your kid sounds like a lot of kids that I see, in that, yes, if they don't get it, then they can have a little more hyperactivity, dysregulation in the afternoon, which is completely within normal limits of what I expect.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I love talking to you about this. I hope this was helpful. I know obviously this conversation was more educational, if anything, but I love chatting about this. I think it's such an important aspect of child development and it's my passion. So I hope that you feel a little more reassured, because it sounds like in this situation, it's something that you can continue to monitor. Nothing that I feel is outwardly a concern right now. And like we said, you're going to continue to watch. Everything should improve in terms of impulse control, sitting still, as the months and years go by. And I think you're going to see that.
Yeah, I've definitely, even like I mentioned earlier, over the last couple of weeks, I've seen positive signs. So that was really, you know, made me happy and glad to see. So we'll just hope that as she continues to get older, that, yeah, it will continue to improve.
Thank you for joining me for this episode. As always, make sure you leave a review or rating if you found it helpful. Share it on social media, tag me, because that is how this podcast continues to grow. And if you are a toddler parent, don't forget to grab my amazing toddler resources available May 1st, 2023. That includes 3 toddler courses and an ebook, which encompasses so much in those toddler years between 1 and 4 years of ages. And if you have a baby, don't forget the New Mom Survival Guide, which goes over everything you need to know for that first year of life. Thank you for joining me, and I cannot wait to have more conversations about child health, development, and parenting on this show, the Peds Doc Talk podcast.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play, and we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board, so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of 2, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.